You certainly do not need me to tell you the cost of everything has gotten higher. This cost increase has affected everything from the non-essential to the very essential, like food, for example. I mean, yeah, you can look for options, less than the financial hit, but how much food shopping can you do at the dollar store and still hope to maintain a normal lifespan? Now, there are some who say that an idea called price controls would be a quick solution to the affordability issue. Remember that saying? Those who fail to learn from history are doomed to repeat it. My first guest today joins us to give a history lesson, let's call it, on price controls and whether they succeeded in the goals that were set for them. He's finance and monetary policy analyst with the Competitive Enterprise Institute, Steve Swedberg. Thanks for being here today, Steve.
Pleasure to be here, Chris.
CEI.org, the website. Learn more about Steve's work and the other experts and analysts with the Competitive Enterprise Institute. For the listeners, Steve, let's establish a definition. What are price controls?
Price controls are they are limits that the government imposes on how high or low, sometimes there are price floors, how low a price can go. And in this case, politicians are proposing them in various forms to respond to high grocery bills and just this persistent inflation we've been seeing since around 2021-22.
Now, if you look throughout history, are price controls established through executive orders? Does a law have to be passed? What are the mechanics behind establishing price controls?
Oftentimes it can be, it can come from the federal government. It can come from the state government. In Argentina, it came federal. So it really depends. I mean, we have a more federalized system. There are price gouging laws, which price gouging laws are sometimes, they're price ceilings, during emergencies, like a hurricane or a storm, where the government says on the state level, you can only charge this much during a natural disaster.
Now, obviously not looking to protect the grocery industry. They're in effect victims, too, because when you look at the price of food, it's from cost of energy for the farmers, the cost of tariffs that the importers have to pay to pass on to the consumers. But as it is for grocery stores, by and large, they're not working with a lot of wiggle room to begin with as far as trying to make a profit and keep the lights on, the doors open, are they?
Oh, you're absolutely right on that point. Normally a business, for it to be a healthy business, usually runs with a 5-10% profit margin. Grocery stores, they're usually around the 1-2% mark. So, yeah, you're right. They really don't have a lot of wiggle room. And if you take away that wiggle room, What happens as a result, both in theory and in practice? What happens? You have fewer items on the shelf. They have less incentive to invest in better services. And in worst case scenario, there can be closures of grocery stores.
Or at the very least, reduction in staff.
That too, and which will make it even more complicated and make it even harder for people or more expensive for people to get groceries in the long run.
Now, obviously, the layperson thinks, okay, if prices are out of control, put some kind of control on them, even if it's temporary, until everything rebalances and reshifts and we can get back to some realm of normalcy. But if you look through history, that hasn't always worked out according to plan or hope, has it?
I would say that's an understatement. Price controls are one of the oldest and most tried policy interventions in history. You could probably go back about a good 3 millennia on that one, particularly with interest rate control caps. It's been tried and failed because rather than trying to help out the problem, it creates more problems. Because, Chris, a lot of people think of the economy like it's a machine. Like you fix the gear here or tighten the screw there, you fixed everything. But in fact, the economy functions more like an ecosystem. So when you try to fix something in one place, you have a bunch of other unintended consequences like grocery store closures and empty shelves that happen instead.
Well, that's the thing, looking through some of the history that you write about and did some digging on my own too. More often than not, price controls actually wind up creating product shortages, which wind up creating higher prices.
Exactly, and that defeats the purpose of price controls, because you're just creating more problems along the way.
So why are people going? I mean, is it just as simple as a senator or House member or president saying, "Well, I have to look like I'm doing something," so this will be a nice, quick, easy, superficial fix? Where in fact, it's like putting a Band-Aid on an amputation.
Yeah, there's definitely a political. Like, I think with a lot of public policy, it sounds good on paper. It sounds good from a political standpoint, but when implemented, it creates more problems. Yeah, both sides are doing it and have done it. And this is not original. Like, we did it in World War II. We did it during the Nixon era. It creates shortages and quality, and the quality of food gets, like in World War II. They were replacing like tea with grass, like they were really cutting back on quality. And I mean, those were more extreme. I mean, World War II was a wartime, but the Nixon era was not wartime. That was relatively peacetime, and we still had shortages and quality issues, and people were less incentivized to produce more and to invest in food production. So that's the kind of thing we don't want to have happen in an attempt to, quote-unquote, try to do something.
As you write, too, in the article, which you can find at CEI.org, we'll put a direct link to it, too, it just has the outreaching effect. I mean, you always think that an action coming in is going to solve a problem, but with price controls, it just, and we've talked about some of them already, from farmers to retail to businesses to the consumer, it just has a negative impact as the ripple effect goes on. We're talking with Steve Swedberg, who is finance and monetary policy analyst with the Competitive Enterprise Institute, CEI.org, their website, and you're listening to Issues and Ideas. It's safe to say, too, that, Steve, with the recent economic statistical news, the picture is not going to get better anytime soon, is it? So even price controls might seem like a superficial fix, but if the numbers keep going, if the cost and inflation keeps going up, what you write about having little effect as it is, if none, is just not going to make a difference one way or another, because it doesn't address the root cause of high prices, and that is inflation.
No, absolutely, and that is a whole other conversation. I'm going to try to throw really quickly just some suggestions. Rather than just complain about prices being high, I mean, one way we can go with it is removing tariffs on food imports. Another one is for the U.S. government to stop subsidizing sugar and corn, because corn's used to feed cows, and boosting that for demand for that and biofuel. And that has health implications with fructose, corn syrup, and all that. Another one we can do is reform occupational licensing, because why do truckers or butchers need hundreds of hours of training before they can start working? It really is an impediment for someone to try to get a job, especially on the lower income end of things.
And certainly giving better policies and better fairness of regulations and rules to the farmers, that would be a big help.
For helping out they are getting help. there are certain subsidies, and that's another distortion. And that also affects, like with sugar, especially with the sugar and corn, that really affects prices as well. So, yeah, I mean, generally, it's just the more we can cut back on those regulations that help that are hamstringing the market back, the better the markets can work out and the prices can signal, rather than artificial ceilings and floors that create more problems than solutions.
Last question, only because we have a changing of the guard coming up with the Fed, and a lot of this begins and ends with the Fed and what they do or don't do. Are there concerns that the incoming head of the Fed, Kevin Warsh, is not going to want to maintain the independence and take action based on economic stats, and instead work for the White House instead of for the economy?
That is a concern. CEI has written about that, because for a number of years, Kevin Warsh was an inflation hawk, and then right around when he was being considered for Fed chair, did he change his tune. I think especially now with the energy price volatility with the war in the Middle East, there's even less reason to lower the interest rate now than there was just even a few weeks ago. And if he ends up doing that, and this is the Fed once again is trying to play this balancing act between making sure the labor market's stable and prices are stable. Whole nother conversation about the dual mandate there. But essentially, yeah, that would, I think that would create some issues. And I think those are some good questions to ask as his confirmation hearing is approaching.
Check out Steve's article over at CEI.org. No free lunch. Price controls won't make groceries more affordable. Steve Swedberg, thanks so much for bringing us a better understanding of reality versus imagery. And thanks for being here today.
Thank you, Chris. Have a great day.
And now for an opposing viewpoint.
Starting on day one, we will end inflation and make America affordable again.
But the word affordability is a Democrat scam.
One of my top priorities will be to quickly defeat inflation and make America affordable again.
I don't want to hear about the affordability.
We will make America affordable again. We're going to make it affordable again.
You know, there's this fake narrative that the Democrats talk about affordability. Affordability is a con job.
We will target everything from car affordability to housing affordability.
You know, this whole thing is, they use the word affordability. It's a Democrat hoax.
And then I have to listen to the fake news talking about affordability, affordability. Do you notice what word have you not heard over the last 2 weeks? Affordability. Because I've won affordability. I had to go out and talk about it.